This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employee seminar held on September 17, 2025 in East Earl, Pennsylvania.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Living out company core values. Thank you, Eugene. I had the privilege of working with him there, like you said, in the sales team at Agritier. And that's a great team to be a part of. And as I was preparing for this topic, I thought, well, we might just have to dig into Agritier and take a little look at some of that. So he said he was looking over my slides and he wondered what I'm all going to say about the company. But the thing is, he doesn't operate the soundboard, so I can say whatever I want. He can't shut me off. So, but he does. He is in charge of my paycheck, so I will have to keep that in mind. So, alrighty, living out company core values. I want to go ahead and just hit, as I was wrestling through this topic, trying to figure out a little bit where to go, I thought, you know, I think the main theme here this afternoon, I like to just explore how to make core values a lived reality, not just words on a poster. But to get started, like a raise of hands, how many people could take me to your office, to a place on the wall, to your handbook somewhere and say, Randall, here's our core values. We got them written down. We know what they are. We wrestled through them. We figured out what our core values are. Raise of hands. How many people have done that? Okay, not quite 100%. If you didn't raise your hands, this topic might not be as relevant to you because you might still be wrestling through what are the core values of our company. The fascinating thing I would say to you is there's probably something that does make your company who it is. There's certain things that seem right and certain things that don't seem right in your company. So even if you don't have them written down, probably to some degree there's something that you would say, this is who we are, right? So if you don't have them written down, I would encourage you to go back to your boss and tell him that Randall Wenger at Anabaptist Financial Meeting told us that we should talk about what our core values are. So we're not going to talk about how to make core values. We're going to dig into how to live them out to be something that's real. I don't know if any of you ever heard of the story about Mrs. Crabapple. It's actually a real name. But Southwest Airlines is a unique airline in the industry. They started back in the 1960s. Has anybody ever flown Southwest Airlines? Any of my co-Southwest people here? Very good. I always really enjoy flying with them. But there's some things that are unique about Southwest Airlines. So when they started, it was in the 60s down in Texas. There was multiple airlines already going. And they came in to compete with them. There's actually several lawsuits filed to try to stop them from starting. Their goal was to create an efficient, affordable ticket that the regular working man could afford to go from, it was a couple cities in Texas there, they're just connecting the cities together, just an efficient and affordable ticket. People could go here to there, just a regular working man could go home for the weekend, visit his family, visit his friends, whatever he had going on that he needed to go fly home for the weekend or over to his friends. And as they tried to build their place, tried to find a place in the airline market, so to speak, they realize another thing these people really enjoy is friendly staff. So these guys are flying. They're not driving. They're trying to get there quicker. And a lot of the airlines tend to be really formal. And if you ever are flying and your plane gets delayed or something, you got to get another ticket, you go talk to the person. A lot of times they have the reputation for being hard to deal with and kind of grumpy. And Southwest has made it a huge priority to be just a friendly airline as well. So that's who they are, right? They're efficient. Some of the things they did to be efficient is they have no first class. All the seats in a Southwest airplane are all the same, front to back. And that's to be efficient. So, and to be affordable as well, because they don't have any fancy first class seats. Did you know another thing that Southwest doesn't do is they don't serve any meals? You'll never get a meal on a Southwest Airlines flight. And that's all to be affordable. Basically, their core values were efficiency, affordability, and just being super friendly. And that's where a lot of people were coming to them. They didn't want to have to, they weren't buying first class tickets. And they weren't looking for that, super fancy ride. Again, ahead of myself a little bit, as Southwest was trying to get started, they ran into some financial trouble. They had four airplanes in the beginning, and they went back to three. Now, they could only do that because they talked to their staff and they said, how can we transport the same number of passengers on three planes as we can with four planes? Well, right at that time, it was taking them 25 minutes from the time the plane landed, went into the gate to unload, load passengers, and turn around and leave again. They figured out that if we if we don't give anybody a seat number and just let them choose the seats as they get on the airplane, we can actually change it from taking 25 minutes to get down to 10 minutes to empty the airplane, load it back up with passengers, and leave. And by doing that, they could go from four airplanes to three airplanes and stay in business. So all this stuff happened. This is what made Southwest Airlines who they are. They're also known for being hubris. I think one of the interesting stories, I think I have it correct, is there was a flight attendant one time, Southwest Airlines came in to land. It was a windy day. It was a bit rough. But anyway, this is how they do their humor. It's kind of funny. Hit the runway, hit a little hard. He actually bounced again, hit again, bounced again. Finally got on the ground. Flight attendant comes on and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Dallas. After the pilot is done hopping us to the hangar, we will unload the airplane." So who would ever say that, right? It makes the pilot sound like a terrible fellow. But that's who Southwest is. They just love to have a great time. Well, why am I telling you all this? Because it's important to know this story. So Miss Crabapple comes along. She loves to fly first class. She'd heard about Southwest Airlines, so she's like, I got to try these guys out. Comes there, gets a ticket, flies the first time, and she's a bit shocked. So she's used to like really prim and proper flight attendants, in their fancy suits, pilots who walk around in fancy suits. And I'm used to being able to buy first class, get her fancy meals. She gets off that flight and she is rather offended. Like these people they weren't the super professionals that she was familiar with, weren't all the extras, the first class and all that stuff that she wanted. So she said, I'm gonna make a complaint. She writes a complaint in, goes into Southwest Airlines. And, but what do you do if you're Southwest Airlines and you don't offer meals, you don't offer first class, and you actually like to be more casual? You let your flight attendants just more casual wear. They don't have to be super professional. Because why? We're trying to be friendly. We're trying to make it more like family here. Well, what do you do then? Well, they just told dear Mrs. Crabapple, hey, this is how we do. Sorry that didn't work out for you, but it's how we do. Well, apparently Mrs. Crabapple really liked the flight because she flew again. And again, and again, and again. And after every flight, she'd write in a complaint. She got to be so common, they called her the pen pal at Southwest Airlines. But lo and behold, once upon a time, they were getting ready to take off. And the flight attendants used to kind of like to be a little humorous too. And she's going across the safety, how to do your seatbelt, how to do your oxygen mask, all this stuff. And she said, "Ladies and gentlemen, if we would have to do a water landing." She went through everything, and she said, "And by the way, we would come up and down the aisles with beach towels and water bottles so you can enjoy your time at the ocean." Okay, I'm taking a little creative liberties there. I don't know if those are the exact same words. But Mrs. Crabapple was just shocked. You can't imagine somebody who's in charge of the safety of the airplane making a joke about a water landing. I mean, we'd all die. So she gets back, and you can imagine what she did. Yep, she wrote that letter, sent it up to the HR department, and it comes on their desk, and they're like, "Dear Mrs. Crabapple, what are we going to do with this?" And the one person looked at the other and said, "You know what? We're just going to send it up to the founder, Mr. Erb. Send it to his desk. He can deal with this." All right. Comes up to Mr. Erb's desk. He sits there looking at it. "So I have a question for you. Do you think, as Mr. Erb's looking at this complaint, does he see where any of his employees did something different than what his company core values were?" They were being friendly. They were trying to be efficient, trying to create an affordable airline. So there was nothing that an employee did wrong, right? Because Mr. Erb knew the core values of his company so well, this is the line he wrote back to, mind you, a paying customer. This is what she got back. "Dear Mrs. Crabapple, we will miss you. Love, Erb." Can you imagine if that got on Twitter today? But you know what? The people of Southwest Airlines stood behind him, and he stood behind them. Why? Because their core values were so clear. They knew what they were about. They knew that they could never deliver what she wanted. She was going to be a lot better served going to United, American, whoever else, not Southwest Airlines. Does that make sense? So that's why I think core values are so important. They help you know, let's move along. They provide you a vision. Without the vision, the people perish. We need a vision as to where we're going. These slides are in your book there as well if you want to follow along. So with that, with their core values, Southwest knew they weren't going to try to make some new fancy cakes or something like that. They were headed on an efficient, affordable, friendly airline. This is where we're going. It provides a catalyst for growth. They knew they could trust. That decision was one they could trust because the president had made a decision that this, he clearly made a decision to say, we're not going to be able to serve you because this isn't where we're going. We're not trying to build fancy cakes, you know. We're not trying to build fancy first class. We're just an efficient, affordable aircraft, airline. Your core values will help you to build trust. Also, collaboration. So if they were looking for an opportunity to grow, they were looking for an opportunity to find customers who wanted an efficient and affordable airline, right? They weren't competing with the fancy first class. They were looking for customers who wanted an efficient and affordable airline. They knew their purpose. Why? Because they knew what their core values were. So what happens when your core values aren't lived out? So this can be kind of, there's a lot of different places this can go, but I think one of the most common things you'll see in a business is when, like you say, let's say you are a, I can just use Agritier for an example. So say we're Agritier, we're selling tractors, and we believe in excellence. We believe in work that's well done at a high level. That's one of the things that you'll see on our core values later. Excellence is our fifth core value. So if an employee feels like employee number two is getting away, sending a tractor out, it's got a little scratch on the hood, it's kind of down the bottom, nobody's really going to see it, and he's just sending it out the door like that and not going to worry about it, that would not be okay. But if he sees them getting away with it, and he sees that on his jobs he's putting less hours in to get the same work done because he's not as careful as I am, that can get really frustrating, right? And there's a sense in where I can be like, well, if nobody else cares at Agritier about that, why should I care? Disengagement, right? You guys know what that's like. You're out doing a job, maybe you're a roofing company, and one guy gets away with cutting corners and stuff like that, and it's like nobody seems to care, and the boss doesn't seem to care. It's hard to stay engaged, right? When they're not lived out, we start to get disengagement. And the next thing is mistrust. Well, it doesn't seem like people care. And I'm not sure I can trust him anymore. I'm always going to have to make sure I keep him down the ground doing something while I'm putting shingles on. Or else I'll make sure that I do all the new tractors, let him work on the used ones, because I'm not sure if I trust him anymore. Siloed teams. When we lose that trust and we start that disengagement, the next thing that happens is we start looking for guys who agree with us, right? And so now you got these little group of guys over here. They think they're better than that group of guys over there. And that group of guys thinks they're better because, well, you have all your reasons, right? So core values are important because they give us a way to go, a vision, and they help us know when we're on the right path and how we can pull together. Another place where this can really become kind of personal then is in your personal values and how your company core values blend together. So I think a lot of us probably are followers of God, seeking to be a part of the kingdom of God. But inside of that vision, then we have our personal mission and our company core values. So I have a question for you. Maybe I'll say it like this first, just preface it. I enjoy relationships. It's one of the things that I've always been passionate about. And I enjoy getting to know people, connect with people. Do you think if, I'm trying to think of a company that'd be very, very impersonal, maybe Amazon Delivery Man. Nothing against Amazon Delivery Man. But maybe say Amazon Delivery Man, you know, there's a job opening like that. If I would take that job opening, I think that would be a really dissatisfying job for me. Or maybe a UPS guy. Those guys will barely talk to anybody. They run and drop the package off out the door again, back in again, out again. I just wouldn't enjoy it. And it's kind of the reason why I quit farming and came to work at Agritier. The tractor, I could talk all day and never talk back. I mean, it was a one-way street. It never argued with me. Anyway, when it didn't want to go, I guess it shut off. Anyway, so your personal mission, the things you're excited about, if you're the type of guy who loves to grow things, start things, make things happen, you might like going to a company who's up and going, trying to build new locations, trying to make things happen. If you're the type of guy who wants to build relationships in the local community, you might enjoy the local coffee shop. Hey, somebody wants to start a coffee shop? Somebody was talking about $5 coffee earlier today. Maybe $6 coffee would be better. I don't know. So if you enjoy connecting with a local town, maybe the coffee shop be the best place for you. You'd never enjoy the UPS guy. I know I wouldn't enjoy the UPS guy. I'm not sure I enjoy the coffee shop, but I like the tractor sales. It's something I enjoy. It's a place, it's a company, the company core values at Agritier is something I really appreciate and value. And I would say I have found a sweet spot there. It's a job I enjoy, a job I feel the company and I are headed the same place. This is something, if you are at a company where you feel like you're just not a good fit, I would encourage you to think about this. What is the company that you're working with known for? What are they trying to pursue? Where are they going? Is this something you're excited about? If you can't get excited about what your company's doing, you're going to have a hard time enjoying your job. So I don't know if the sweet spot's a good word to use there, but core values are important, folks, because they help you know where the company's going. They can help you understand if you're at the right company. And what are we doing? We're exploring how to make core values a lived reality, not just words on a poster. Do not forget that. This next one's a little story of mine. I look at the company core values. So I wasn't sure how to go through the next section of translating them from words to actions. I'm going to try to tell you this little story, or long story. So Agritier core values. Number one is honor God. So we desire to honor God in all aspects of our business. The second one is teamwork. We value each team member and will work together to achieve our mission. Integrity is the third one. We uphold the principles of goodness, honesty, and truthfulness. Four is relationships. We treat our customers as family and serve them to our highest potential. And five is excellence. We operate with excellence by providing premium products and exceptional service. So that is the Agritier core values. And when you come to work at Agritier, it will be expected that you agree to hold to the core values. So here's an interesting story. I think it's about 2 years or 3 years ago now. I was fairly new in sales, yet about a year or two in. I had a gentleman come to me in about January, February, and he said, "Hey, Randall," he was out of the area, and he's like, "Hey, Randall, you know, I've been looking at tractors. I see you have some here, and I used to work with you guys back when it was MM Weavers before, and yeah, just interested to know what you have for some Fendt tractors." "Oh, sure, we'll go out and look at tractors. Yep, love to sell a tractor any day." So we're talking. First, we're looking at a big tractor. We're looking at a small tractor. I don't know if we looked at four or five tractors that day. And I was like, "Oh, this guy's must really be interested in tractors," or a little indecisive. I wasn't sure which. Anyway, comes back the next day. Him and his wife got a motel, came back. And we were looking at a smaller tractor and finally decided, "You know what, I think it's one that'll fit the budget. We got a deal worked out." And by the way, he wants a mower too. "Oh yeah, we have a mower here too." Now, well, this mower is probably going to be everything this tractor can handle. So 3-point mower out the side, maybe about 11, 12 feet long, kind of heavy, you know, sideways. Tractor wasn't the biggest tractor. I was like, "You know, in the hills down where you are, it might be a little hard, but yeah, we hooked it up. I think we're going to be okay." Anyway, so this is like January, February, and got the tractor ready, got the mower ready, sent it down to him. He hooks it up, and wow, this thing was definitely not working on his hills. So by March, we had figured out maybe we should get a different mower. So yep, get a different mower. So we went and got a pull-type trailer mower and did a deal. "We'll trade this 3-point mower back in and get you the pull-type mower. Yep, this will be awesome. All right, go to the field. We're going to have fun times." And around that time, I think he decided he ought to have a bigger tractor. So he got a little bit bigger tractor then. I'm not sure if he'd done the first cutting of hay yet. And so he gets the bigger tractor. I think the bigger tractor is the one that went to the field. The second tractor, okay? Keep the numbers straight here. So we get to the field of the second tractor, and by that time, we're back to the first mower because the second tractor is bigger and the first mower works better. So we, yep, swap the paperwork around again. Get the first mower. Yep, go to the field. Oh, we're happy, happy, man. This is going to be good. So go to the field, mow some hay, make some hay. Somewhere in there, we got a round baler in the deal. By the end of the year, the second tractor wasn't big enough. We're on to the third tractor, and over the winter, we get a triple mower. You know, one of those big, like 30-some-foot mowers. Triple mower did not come from us, came from another dealer. And by this time, he was working with a salesman a little closer to him. They were getting some things worked out. So now we're second spring's coming up, and we're getting ready to go with this big triple mower. And I'm not sure what happened. Something was wrong with the first triple mower. So, yep, those guys worked out, got him a second triple mower, took the first one back. So kind of a theme here, right? And and then we're going into the summer. Something's wrong with the front 3 points, the rear 3 points. Something's leaking oil somewhere. So we get that fixed up, or so we thought we did. Well, I can't remember all the details almost. There's quite a few. I think we're still in the third tractor because late in the summer, I know it kept getting worse and worse and different frustrations. Something was wrong with the new baler and the dry applicator kit on that thing. Anyway, his phone number shows up on my phone again. I think it's about September, August, September. He had told the guys down there, he's just frustrated dealing with them. And they asked him, "Oh, hey, do you want to talk to somebody else?" Well, him and Randall always got along good. "All right, you'll go talk to Randall." "Yeah, go talk to Randall." So back at my desk again here. And by this time, right around this time, I think is when the letter showed up on my desk as well. Kind of set up to us from this attorney that Mr. So-and-so was not taken care of. These are all the grievances. And you have by this date, take the equipment back, write him a check for X amount of money. And the check amount was at least the value of the equipment when it was newer, maybe a tad higher. Well, my boss was like, Randall, we got to work something out here. Like, we're never going to make money if we trade this stuff in like this. Yeah, I agree with you. All right, we'll work something out. So talked to him up. Hey, can you come up, sit down, we talk about this? You know, sorry you got treated wrong. Come up, you know, because I'm thinking core values, right? Core values are, a couple of these come up. You know, honor God, integrity, treat them like family, right? And bless is going through my mind. I'm not sure how we're going to deal with this. Got an attorney letter coming up with an end date on it. Going to court if we don't settle by then. And the boss doesn't really want to go to this letter because we're definitely not going to end up at a good spot. So here we go. Comes up, having a meeting. I called in a couple of the other guys. I think Eugene might have actually been in that meeting. I sit around the table, and well, it was a bit tense. I'll be honest. It was a bit tense. And there were some things that we had come up short on. But somebody talked about assumptions. David, did you mention assumptions, things we believe, false beliefs maybe? I'm not sure how many assumptions were made, or maybe I had a whole bunch, but seemed like some other people did too. But anyway, sitting at a meeting, working through this thing, and I don't know if you dealt with customers like that, but got through it, kind of coming out the other end of it, and I feel like, well, maybe we're going to make something happen here. Kind of, there was this new tractor on the lot. It was pretty nice. And he was out, walked around and saw it. I was like, you know what, maybe I'd go with that new tractor, and actually a big square baler would be nicer than a round baler. Oh yeah, sounded good. Maybe just make a deal that way. Get a new tractor, a new big square baler. Hey, here we go. And by the end of that meeting, we kind of got, that's kind of where we're going to head. So, all right. And well, what do you want to trade the equipment in for? Well, that was a little touchy. I had emailed him some numbers, and he kind of thought he'd be okay with them. Anyway, that was before the meeting, though. So come to the meeting. We decide we're going to do the new tractor, new big baler. And after we're all done with this meeting, he heads back down. We're getting the final prices worked out. I emailed him, hey, thank you for coming up. You know, I appreciate your time. You guys coming up and spending a lot of time with us working this out. And here's the final numbers. And here's our trade. So this will be the balance. And I'll get you a loan wrote up for this. Yep, sure. But then when he emailed me back, he said, yeah, sure, Randall. I'd love to do that. And I'll take the new equipment for this price, and trade-ins will be this price, and we'll do the deal. Well, so magically overnight, the trade-ins went up like $5,000 or $10,000. I'm not quite sure what happened. But anyway, so I'm sitting there thinking, I got ahead of myself a bit. So what do you do now? Your trades are like $5,000 or $10,000 up. I mean, number three says, we believe in honesty and truthfulness. Is that just employees, or is that with your customers as well? I mean, I had the email. He knew what I had said. And I was like, oh, buddy, you ever get that feeling? You're going to make that phone call and it's all going to go haywire? I was pretty sure that was going to happen. So I sent him an email. I figured by this time we need track of stuff. So I sent him an email. I said, hey, I think this was our trade-in values. And my phone rings. Oh, okay, it's going to be good. He called me up and goes, hey, Randall, I thought we just really got along good, but now you're calling me a liar. And oh, boy. And that's when he made that famous line. He's like, Randall, I'll have to refer to my lawyer's letter for settling this matter. Oh, boy, my manager told me not to let it come to this. We really didn't want to go here. Oh, boy, what do you do now? Okay, hey, well, thanks for calling me back. Sorry we couldn't work it out. And I'll go talk to the manager and see what he wants to do. So now I'm standing here in my office. I know what the core values are. I know my manager knows what the core values are. But this is going to be a tough situation. Because if we take this equipment in at the prices he wants, it's a no-profit deal. No profit deal. So, walk down the aisle. Hey, Mr. Manager, I got to talk to you. Oh, yeah, sure, yeah. This is what happened. Oh, I thought you had it worked out. I thought you did. Oh, man. All right, can you send an email to everybody, corporate sales manager, president, yep, I can do that. Send it all out. So I'm sitting there wondering. He's like, well, I think it's quiet for a couple of days. I didn't hear a whole lot. And a little while later, I heard what they decided. And, I mean, our core values say, we're going to treat a customer like family and try to take care of them as best we can. And it seemed like the right thing to do in that situation. I'm not saying there wouldn't have been a different way to handle it. Right thing to do in that situation was just write him a check, take the equipment back in our inventory, and move on. There's probably a note on the account that says use caution. But anyways, I don't know. I didn't look, but I'm assuming it would probably have been a wise thing to do if we didn't already. But I share that to say this. Translating core values from words to actions is not an easy thing to do. It is not an easy thing to do. When I was in that meeting, there was different times I just wanted to call him out because I was like, my coworkers treated you better than this. I know we did not do this. But when your core value, number four says, we're going to treat our customers as family and serve them to their highest potential, how would I treat my family? Well, Probably shouldn't treat him like I treat my brother sometimes. But anyway, so you got to interpret that carefully, right? you can tell brother something you can't tell a customer. But this was real for me. This was real. I was 2 years in, and the way that got handled was very pivotal in why I'm still at Agritier today. That was huge. So if you're wondering if these things are important, to me they were very important. To see the company make a decision, willing to lose money to uphold the core values, that spoke volumes to me as an employee. And by the way, I'm not an owner in the company. I'm just an employee, and nobody answers to me either. I'm the bottom of the ladder. We're exploring how to make core values a live reality, folks, not just words on a poster, because they're only words on a poster. They don't mean nothing. All right, let's move into some personal alignment and ownership. So self-reflection questions. What core values feel most natural to you and which ones stretch you? So if you have these written down already, this could be something to go back home and do. You got the slides in your paper there. Another one you can do is a gap analysis. Identify one or two values you could live out more consistently. This is how, if you want to start taking them from words on the wall to being more real, do that little exercise. A morning values check-in ritual. So I heard about a school. I did not verify the name, so I won't use the name, but there's a school that every week when they have faculty meeting, they read off their mission statement at the school. Every teacher in that school could personally tell you exactly what the mission statement is from memory. Do you think those folks know what their core values are and what they're about? Sometimes that stuff can seem overdone, folks, but if we're trying to get somewhere, if we're trying to go somewhere, how are we going to get there without knowing the way, right? You can use your core values to be, and they should be, the guiding principle in your company. And you should think through them carefully. Your core values should be different than the fellow down the street who does the same work you do, right? Because your companies aren't the same. What makes you different is your core values. So Agritier is probably, careful I say this, I don't want to tell anybody not to come buy from us, but I'm probably not the place if you want a Walmart-style tractor, all right? If you want the cheap little throwaway tractor, that's not me. Don't come to me. I mean, you won't like my prices. That's not what we sell. That's not who we are. Just like Southwest Airlines isn't shooting for that high-end customer, they're shooting for a customer who wants a nice price point ticket. You got to know what your company's about. I have nothing against cheap brands out there in the marketplace, but that's not what we're set up to sell. We're set up to sell premium brands looking for excellence. Customers who want that come to Agritier. And we're not the best fit for every customer. But I think we're the best. I hope we're a good fit for some. I might be out of a job soon. Anyway, linking personal goals to company values. This could be in a performance review. If you're getting a review with your boss and you're looking for personal goals, things to work on, what is our company about? What are we trying to accomplish? For us, one of those things is excellence. Is there a way I can do a better job in my deals? Could I try to get back to customers quicker? What are things like that? All goals that are tied to our company core values. Some other ways to get personally aligned is seek feedback from your coworkers. What are areas where I do well? What are areas that I do weak? I'm going to keep on going along. Your team culture. Did you know sometimes it's really hard to be the boss and tell people that they should do things a certain way? When it's actually a whole lot easier if you're a coworker and you tell them the same thing, they'll listen a lot better. Do you realize that? Sometimes it works that way. If the boss says it, well, he has to say it. He's part of the company. But if the coworker says it, you care about this too? There's something that can be said. Lead from anywhere in the company. Try to help people see the value in your core values. Do you see times? I'll back up a little bit. I think one of the things we're really good at is we're telling the stories about when somebody really messed it up. And that's kind of what I did, right? Or maybe not. I told a customer who was really hard to deal with. But I did tell a story, and it was positive how Agritier handled it, or the leadership team did. But find those positive stories. The time, maybe the guy was like, you know what, I'm about to send this tractor out the door, and he comes across the back corner somewhere, scratched up, beat up a little bit. Hey, Randall, we can't take that tractor tomorrow after all. Why is that? Hey, this one shield's beat up a little bit, and I want to pull a new one off another tractor on the lot here until we get another one in, and I'm not sure we're going to have it ready for tomorrow morning. Oh, wonderful. I love to hear it when somebody does that. Sorry, can't hit the deadline because we're shooting for excellence. Does that make sense? And when you have those stories and you can spread those stories, those things help people to know, number one, what's important at your job. Number two, that good things are rewarded, all right? Is it safe in your company to call each other out? And I think earlier when we were talking about anxiety, managing anxiety, working as a team, I thought a lot of this stuff's actually going to kind of play together. So if you have a core value of teamwork, like we do at Agritier there, I think it was number three, if I remember right. Three or four. I have to go back and look there again. Teamwork is something that's really important to us. And part of developing teamwork is developing a positive relationship between the team. Because if you don't have that, all you have is kind of a gang. Did you know sometimes gangs, though, this is a whole bunny trail. Anyway, did you know sometimes people will find more love in a gang than they will in a church? Anyway, that's a total bunny trail. But anyway, we better get off that one. But you want that type of environment. By the way, I like bunny trails. Am I off that one yet? I'm not sure. Anyway, is there a rainbow back there? Daily work life. Make this a part of hiring. Management decisions. Why would you hire somebody at Walmart who wants to sell Mercedes cars? Is he a good fit for Walmart? Probably not. Is the Walmart greeter a good fit for Mercedes dealership? Probably not, right? When you're hiring, are your new hires familiar with the core values of your company, what you're trying to accomplish? Are they excited about being a part of that? If you're putting somebody into a management position who maybe he's really good at getting things done and he works really hard, but he's not a good teamwork person, doesn't work well with the other folks, is he the right person for that manager role? You know, sometimes these decisions can be really hard. You will sometimes promote people to positions that may not have as much skill as another person. Because did you ever hear the line, hire attitude, develop skill? Because if you hire skill, it's really difficult to develop attitude. And by the time you get to the age of holding a job, your attitude's kind of hard to change. Hire attitude, develop skill. Make sure your core values influence who you put in management roles. Let it shape your company. What if nobody else cares about your role? Well, I want to throw a couple cautions out there. If it seems nobody else cares about the core values in your company, make sure it's not just that they just misunderstand it. That could be the first one, a misalignment. What does teamwork mean? Well, what does excellent mean? Does excellent mean that there's no scratch on the tractor or is a tiny little one underneath, you know, where it's a little oily? Does that matter? What does excellence actually mean? So sometimes we're not 100% sure we know what we exactly mean, all right? Another one could be peer pressure. I would normally take my time to do it perfectly, but so-and-so was working right beside me that day, and he's so good at getting done so quick, and I was hoping to get a little closer to his time. Maybe it was peer pressure, right? Is that okay? Is it okay to cut our values down if peer pressure is the reason? How about personal burnout? Maybe that person is just shot and really should have took the day off. So if you're going to talk to somebody or it feels like nobody cares, just realize it could be some of these things, okay? Be gracious. And take them back to the why. Why do our core values matter? Because that's where we're going. It's who we are. Find allies who model the values. Is there anybody else in the company who cares about these values? I'm sure there is. Follow them. Get together with them. And if it's your boss who's not doing well, be very respectful there, okay? I think one of the things that we're really good at doing is roasting bosses, right? You ever have boss for lunch? Sometimes it seems like it tastes good because it would keep it going pretty long. Anyways, if it's your boss that's slipping up, make sure you do that respectfully, all right? Rad, we're exploring how to make our core values a live reality, folks, not just words on a poster. So I'd like to wrap up here. I think I got ahead of myself here. Living out your values will strengthen your culture and develop your trust, your collaboration, and purpose. We talked about that earlier. And it also will multiply impact when your personal mission aligns. So let's say you're that fellow who wanted to connect with the local community. If you go take that job at the coffee shop, you have an amazing opportunity now to work a job, have an income, and connect with the local people. Isn't that incredible? You're helping the company reach its goals. You're also personally reaching some goals that you had. That's an amazing thing. If your job is one that just seems like a challenge to you and you feel like you just don't like what the company's about, I would encourage you to look for another job. Even if it's good paying, it never is worth working at a job for pay and putting up with it, all right? Find a job where you can go, find fulfillment, find value, and is heading somewhere where you want to go. Also, do you have core values already written down? Find one this week and find a concrete way to live it out. Is it about honoring God? What are some ways you can do this? I saw some of my coworkers up in the lunchroom putting up a Bible verse weekly on the little like note board there, and somebody took the time every week to put up a little Bible verse. It was kind of neat and just kind of an inspirational one. Change it every so often. I know of another coworker who was out working with a guy, and he could tell the farmer was having a really hard week. And he finally asked him about it a little bit, And I think it was one of the first times that somebody had actually shown a lot of personal interest in this fellow. And I don't know if I'm exactly correct, but I think he had just lost his dad not too long ago. And I don't know if he was exactly dealing with suicide, but it was a pretty hard time for him. And he made a commitment to Christ that afternoon with my coworker there out in the field working on that planter. So that was pretty fascinating story. I don't know if they had kept up a lot after that, but you never know when those opportunities will be there. And all it came from was him asking a question and just stopping and saying, you know, are you okay? Because something doesn't quite feel right. Is it okay to be punched in over that time? Take that up with your boss. I hope that would not be a reason why you would choose not to talk to people about things that matter. So how about choosing a value and identifying one way just to live it out this week? That will help you move toward being a core value ambassador. You might have saw this line before, I don't know. Preach the gospel everywhere you go, and when necessary, use words. People will see your example. We talked about finding other people in the company who are doing it, who are living out values that the company stands for. The only way they're going to see it is if you live it. So preach it, folks, and when necessary, use words. All right, one last story if the clock doesn't run out. Chick-fil-A has been a fascinating company to me. Watching them start up, I was digging into the story a little while ago for another presentation I did. It was started by a couple brothers. Their mother ran a boarding home and got the boys to help her make food. That's where the brothers who started Chick-fil-A actually got started. I never knew that before, but I dug in the history of it. They learned how to bake, helping their mom in the kitchen make food for the boarding room. I thought it was a boarding school, but it might have just been a boarding house too. So anyway, these guys started up. They're supposedly their first week that they had started their own little restaurant. They're close to a railroad station and like a car manufacturing facility. I forget who it was, Ford or Dodge or somebody. They're right in that area. They work for 6 days straight, about almost around the clock, because they would sleep in the little. It wasn't called Chick-fil-A back then. It was whatever it was. Sleep in the little restaurant when somebody would come. They'd wake up, make them whatever they needed to, and keep on going. And so they worked for 6 days straight. We're totally burned out. So the story goes, and at the end of 6 days, one brother said to the other, "She'll be closed tomorrow. It is Sunday. Yeah, let's be closed." And that's kind of how it started. And as they went on and started developing their core values, they said, you know what? One thing we never want to do is be open on a Sunday. But you know what the price they're paying for that today? That's $100 million choice. Now, I recently heard an interview with a Chick-fil-A owner. And what you got to remember is this is not just Chick-fil-A corporate, okay? Every Chick-fil-A is a franchise, right? Owned by a local person. That local person is choosing to lose sales. That's how clear this core value is to Chick-fil-A. So not only is the Chick-fil-A corporate team losing money, the local owners are also losing, not everyone $100 million, but gross in the company-wide. It's a $100 million choice. I would love to make $100 million. Let alone have the chance to lose $100 million every year. Are core values important to Chick-fil-A? That has become so important, they wrote it into what I think they call it a covenant. So it can never be changed. It is part of the corporate structure of Chick-fil-A today, because that was a question that came up in the interview, and it's actually a covenant that Chick-fil-A holds on to today. So we have explored how to make core values a lived reality, not just words on a poster, folks. Go and be a core value ambassador in your company today. And I think for those of you, like I said at the beginning, for those of you who don't have core values written down, explained, or how would you say, clearly identified, I would encourage you to go home, do that. It will definitely help you come together as a team. It will give you a direction. And whenever you get that customer who really gives you a hard time, it will give you a direction how to work through that. Thank you.